Well, happy Halloween, everyone. This is great fun to see all the costumes in the room, and might feel a little funny to be looking this direction. This is also Halloween is part of a Celtic holiday. You might know the roots of Samhain, and both, of course, have this this ritual of costuming, but also. This is a time of year when many will say that the veil is the thinnest it could possibly be between the physical realm and the spiritual realm, which means that what is accessible to us is those who have made their transition before us and also other beings, perhaps like angelic beings or elementals. So it's that time of year when that kind of possibility is most ripe for us, essentially. So that's an exciting part of this time. And those voices, those communications can, of course, help us grow and heal and have things revealed to us that we might not otherwise know about. So watch out for what might be coming in the coming days if you haven't already had these experiences. And of course, because it's Halloween, and we are in the series of The Path of the Holy Fool, you could probably guess who I'm dressed as. There are many expressions of the Holy Fool. I think this sort of court jestery one is the one that I relate to the most. But so today, that you know, some of us, obviously you could tell, some of us have fun wearing costumes, right? For some of us, it is really fun. But there's another reason beyond the fun, and it really is a spiritual reason. Because when we give ourselves permission to dress up and to take character of something else, it allows our soul to freely express in a whole different way than we might not otherwise. It's a way of exploring some aspect of ourselves, right, that we might not normally walk about in the world. I had a coworker many years ago who would come in costume and all day long, I mean from 8 or 9 a.m. until 5 or whenever we quit, she was in character, I mean, full-on character. So you try to have a business conversation with her, and she was only through the lens of her character could you have that conversation. So it was part of that experience of kind of like what we might call an avatar. Now, today when I say avatar, a lot of us immediately think of our phones and the little memes, right, that are the avatars. If some of you have those on your phones, a little cartoonish version of who you are. And then it's kind of fun to see what your friends send back when they're sort of in their mode of their avatar. So we get to be things that we, and do things we might not otherwise. I mean, sometimes it's kind of empowering. They're sort of these superhero things, right? I mean, we can dance with skeletons, we can become cats, we can fly on leaves, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. But actually, avatar has a derivation that has a more spiritual grounding. It comes from Hinduism. And in Hinduism, the avatar is a deity that becomes incarnated, embodied on earth, especially at times in the world when the cosmos has some crises going on. And so it's a time when we can call forth these avatars. In the Bhagavad Gita, it speaks to this. It actually expresses this truth. Whenever righteousness wanes and unrighteousness increases, the scripture says, I send myself forth for the protection of the good and for the destruction of evil and for the establishment of righteousness. I come into being age after age. So I don't know about you, but holy fools like me would like to call in the avatars about right now. Calling all avatars! You want to call them in with me? Let's do it. Calling all avatars! I think they heard us. Bunch of characters we are, quite literally, right? So this time of year also you might know is a Mexican holiday. You probably have heard of it, Dia de los Muertos. I said that wrong. Muertos. I knew there was something about that. Or otherwise known as the Day of the Dead in English. And it's celebrated actually over 2 days. And it is, again, in this case, a real embracing of death, an allowing death to be a celebratory time and an honoring of the ancestors. It's an honoring of life and death, really, and recognizing that we can come into a space of sort of making peace with the ways that we might, more, some of us culturally, hold death at bay, right? As far away as we can possibly do. But there is great gift in coming near to look death in the face, to confront death a little bit more, to allow death to be a teacher for us. So with all the spiritual support of the holidays, I was thinking it might be a good time for us to do that. You know, Khalil Gibran, the poet, spoke of death as life. He said, life and death are one, even as the river and the sea are one. So have you ever lost somebody who is dear to you, or maybe been to a memorial service, and it sparked more life in you? It allowed you to be reminded of why you're here and what you're up to, and it inspired you to get on with it and to really live more fully. Anybody ever have that experience? Yeah, so many of us. So many of us, when in the face of death, live more fully, more passionately, more true to who we are. So I was wondering, what would it be like if we could actually just have a dialogue with death? You know, invite mortality in, not maybe so much as an avatar, or maybe as an avatar, but just as a presence that could really, we could learn a little bit from. And so I invited mortality, and guess what? Here we are. Well, hello, Death. Well, thank you for coming. I know you have a busy schedule. But us holy fools wanted to have a little chat today.
Yes, yes. My pleasure.
Why do you laugh in that scary way?
It's my shtick. You mortals seem to be so scared of me.
Well, shouldn't we be scared of you?
Well, maybe for the same reason that you just named. Life and death are one. I'm just a passageway to your next expression. I guess I scare you because I bring the unfamiliar and the unknown. You aren't sure, if anything, what comes next. The main thing I can remind you to do is live fully.
Hmm. What do you mean?
Well, you're acting the fool now. I know the holy fool is not afraid of me. Stop pretending we don't go way back.
You make me want to move a couple stools over, but I'll stay put for now. So moving on, let's get on to life. Let's get on to this living idea.
I want to turn the tables now, because I know holy fools know some of the secrets of living fully. Tell us one.
Well, I guess I do. I like to have fun. I like to joke. I like to laugh. I like to play. I like to lighten things up, you know, to be a bringer of joy and light.
Exactly. And how do you do that?
I think by staying connected to my imagination. You know, I look at situations from different angles, sometimes even funny ones. Like, for example, I think holy fools probably came up with the idea of, imagine your audience is naked.
And fool, pardon me, holy fool, sometimes life is serious. There are tragic, traumatic, shall we say, scary near-death experiences. When you become wounded, it's not all fun and games, is it?
No, it's not, Death. You're right. That's true. You know, humor can open us up. It opens up our heart, but it can only take us so far. We have to be real sometimes about our feelings that are present and the experiences that we have. And, you know, imagination is not pretending that something isn't as it is. But we have to have that ability to meet things as they are and then engage the imagination to be able to see more deeply, more fully, more expansively, to be able to see the invisible and the invisible spiritual aspect, the divine itself, and to bring it into visibility, to bring it into our experience, to draw on that too. I think that's where the imagination really comes in what you're talking about.
Much like death.
Yeah, I guess that seems true. When we really turn and face you, when we face you, and it allows us to consider where we've been, you know, what our legacy is, what we're leaving behind as well. Life gets real pretty fast when we're facing death, doesn't it? We might find the bravery, too, to face our wounds and address them if we haven't yet.
I'm glad you understand the gift that I bring, but why wait until I come knocking?
Well, good point. And here we are. We all get, you know, wounded in life or hurt in life as part of our human journey. Certainly there are going to be times. The key is to tend the wound, right? To not just ignore it, but to allow it to then free us to be the truest self that we have come here to be, our soul expressions. It's funny to say this on Halloween, but actually facing our wounds is kind of like unmasking.
Now you're talking. Take off your mask and tell me about a wound.
This is actually a mask of my own face, made long ago. So now, I will take it off. Already lighter. When I was a young woman, I heard my father say that my cousin was sick because she had a female partner. I wasn't in a hurry to tell him that I did too. After he said that, I didn't want my beloved father thinking I was sick or talking about me in that way. So I kept wearing that mask. I kept wearing a mask around my parents and some others. And sometimes I felt like I was living half my life masked and half my life unmasked.
What changed?
Well, it became so important to be myself that I couldn't hide it anymore, essentially. And I was willing then to even take the risk that my dad might reject me. Even though that was painful to consider. Aeneas Nin put it this way, and the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom.
How did it go?
Well, at the initial sort of coming out conversation, my dad couldn't have been more perfect. He said he loved me. He said he could see how much courage it took for me to share. And then, a week later, he came pontificating about how I had rejected my mother's lifestyle as a homemaker and feminism had led to lesbianism and so on. He was trying to make sense of it, but it was hard to hear his ideas and his thoughts and in front of my mom, too. It was just super uncomfortable. And then another week later, he suddenly made his transition.
Yes, yes, I remember meeting him. So you had confronted the wound, dropped your mask, and expressed your authentic self. How did all that feel?
Well, it was incredibly relieving, as many of you could probably relate to times when you've dropped your mask and allowed yourself to be who you truly are, to feel that freedom, to feel that wholeness of who you are. It's suddenly like you feel like you're fully in your body, you know? You're fully who you've come here to be. So all of that was profound. But of course, there was also a feeling of sadness. I mean, obvious sadness that I had lost my father's physical presence, but also I had lost the opportunity to continue to process this with him.
You know that you can communicate with your beloveds who have crossed over before you, right?
Yes, I do know that, and actually that happened, and it was incredibly easy. It is incredibly easy. All I did was close my eyes, go into meditation, and began to talk to my father, and there he was, and there we were dialoguing frequently for some time, and now pretty much, you know, I can still feel that attunement. I can relate to it in different ways, but anyway, so sometimes I would be in meditation and he would pop in and I wouldn't even necessarily start the conversation. So it was really healing, but also it was really amazing because I felt closer to him than ever, or I feel closer to him than ever. I mean, literally right now I feel like he's off doing something else, and he's, you know, there are times when he feels closer than others, you know, closer in proximity, I guess you could say, energetically than others. But that our conversation felt like it was more spiritually conscious, and I think that's part of the reason why I felt closer.
Hmm. How is your conversation more spiritually conscious?
Well, I'd say the veil of judgment gets lifted, you know, and we regard each other more authentically. And here's the thing, this is of course something that we can do now while we're embodied on earth with the people that we're relating to. We don't need to wait until somebody moves on to have this kind of connection and to lift the veil of judgment ourselves.
Yes, if you don't want to be judged, don't judge, right?
Yes, exactly. If you want to be loved, be love.
Believe me, your soul's become a lot lighter to carry to the other side when you've done your work here.
Mm. You know, you don't seem so scary anymore.
I just have to be myself and do my job to the best of my ability. Just because I get a bad rap doesn't mean that that's what I am. The scary laugh, it's just a mask.
Mm. Well said.
I want to share something from a young blogger named Caleb Keller, who had a close brush with me. He takes this woundedness conversation to the next level.
He says that his aim is to deconstruct and reconstruct Christianity in his writings. You want to read this together?
Sure. Lucky for you, I've still got time.
So Caleb writes while he's in class that Mr. Gritters, his teacher, had all of them calculate how many days left they had to live. He said we all wrote some whopping number down in the tens of thousands, and then he told us to turn our paper over and write a one.
Then he gave the best "what would you do if this was your last day on earth" pitch I've ever heard. This was smack dab in the middle of my rich descent into suicidal thought. He asked us, what would we want others to know us for? What would we be remembered for doing, even as young people?
He continues, I would have told you that I was nothing but a wounded feeler, someone who had big feelings for no reason at all and who nobody would like or understand. But now, he said, if you asked me, I would say I'm a wounded healer. I think I would want to be known in that way.
And how do you define wounded healer?
I would define it as someone who's readily able to extend compassion to others because they have recognized their own wounds and maybe even done some work there.
Jesus is an example of a wounded healer. He fasted for 40 days, so he knew what it felt like to be hungry when he fed the 5,000.
Yeah, as a Nazarene too, and as somebody who had outside the box spiritual ideas, he was often an outcast in his society. In his day, some people would have said he was a fool for engaging with women and Samaritans and prostitutes and tax collectors of his day. But Jesus stayed true to his heart and soul. He exemplified love and inclusivity and compassion. He was a holy fool.
Caleb concludes, Jesus whispers to me when I work with the troubled kids I do now. This is the gospel, that we might be present to the pain of others and offer healing, using our own wounds to remind others that they are not alone in theirs.
And so it is.
And so it is.
So life is truly precious, isn't it? And so as we consider what's the greatest thing we can do, it's ourselves being the avatars of our own divine selves, of our own truth, our own fullness, our own unique soul expression, as well as the divinity that we are. It's all connected. So if we let our hearts feel and we let our souls express freely, this is the avenue to get there. We are authentic holy fools, allowing ourselves this full expression, and we are also wounded healers who can offer untold capacity for compassion. So let's know this truth as we try on these couple of ways of being the holy fool and the wounded healer. I invite you to speak this affirmation with me. I express my soul with authenticity and compassion. I am a holy fool and a wounded healer. And so it is.